Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and we're very pleased to have the New York State Education Commissioner, John King, as our first guest this hour to talk mostly about two very contentious and complicated issues that have fallen into his lap. He just had to impose a teacher evaluation system on New York City when Mayor Bloomberg and the UFT failed to negotiate one, and he's trying to resolve the tragic conflict in Rockland's East Ramapo School District, Spring Valley and around there, that we've talked about before on the show, that is hollowing out some once great public schools and dividing the mostly black and Latino immigrants who go to the schools from the mostly Hasidic Jews who sit on the school board. Commissioner, thanks so much for your willingness to talk about these difficult things with us. Hi.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And we'll open up the phones on the East Ramapo issue as we continue to welcome calls from all sides in that torn community. 212-433-WNYC, if you want to talk directly to the State Education Commissioner today, 212-433-9692, or you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show on any topic. And while those calls are coming in, let's begin with the New York City teacher evaluations. I guess people want more details on the teacher evaluation system. It's very complicated, with a percentage from standardized tests, a percentage from announced or unannounced principal observations, a percentage to be negotiated between teacher and principal. What conflict did you resolve that the mayor and the union couldn't break the impasse on?
Well, it's interesting. In a lot of ways, there was strong consensus between the city and the UFT on the core elements that you just described. And I think, you know, over the last 4 years in conversations with both UFT President Mulgrew and with the mayor and Chancellor Walcott, it's been clear that folks understood that the current evaluation system, the binary, unsatisfactory, satisfactory system with very little feedback for teachers, that system needed to be replaced. And unfortunately, the breakdown was over very specific issues about how each of those measures would be constructed, the role that the appeals process would play, the role that arbitration might play when certain disputes would come up in implementation. Those were the kinds of things that needed to be resolved in the arbitration.
And somehow you got both sides at the end of the day to praise the system that you imposed. Makes me think, why couldn't they come up with this on their own? But was the biggest thing when it would expire? Because Mayor Bloomberg wanted a system that would last more than 2 years, because he said you can't even get enough evaluations after only 2 years that are bad to fire a bad teacher. And the UFT was insisting that it kind of need to be, you know, redone after 2 years? I mean, was that the biggest thing? Because the mayor won on that point, right?
Well, that was one hurdle, although it was largely resolved in this year's state budget, clarifying that the evaluation system that will succeed this one will have to comply with the elements of the law. So, you know, this plan will be in place for the next 4 years. After that, the union and the city could come together and make changes, but those would have to be consistent with the law, the core elements that you described, and would have to be approved by the commissioner.
In a lot of other places where new evaluation systems have been implemented, because this is a discussion that's taking place all over the country, we've seen the same kind of contentious debate, something like this implemented, and then no larger a percentage of teachers loses their job than used to in the past. Do you think that's going to be the result here?
It's hard to say. You know, I think one of the key things about this evaluation system is so much of the focus, certainly of the politics, is on removing teachers and what percentage will be let go. And from my perspective, this is really about professional development and how do you build a system that identifies excellence so those teachers can be models for their colleagues, helps those in the middle continuously improve, and then helps identify those who are struggling first so they can get support. And then obviously if they don't improve with support, they would be let go. But I think that's going to be a very small percentage. And the real focus here has to be on professional development.
And I think a lot of school staff are just thinking about what an incredibly heavy lift this is to implement. There will be lots of work for the principals who will actually be carrying out observations once the system is in place. But schools also have to form teams and figure out the locally selected student learning objectives, I think they're called. How do you expect schools to figure all of this out by September?
Well, they're certainly going to need a lot of support. And I think certainly folks at Tweed and New York City DOE are working hard to figure out how to be supportive. I know the U of T is committed to supporting teachers through this process. What we've heard across the state, as other districts have implemented this year, is that it is a challenge to get things launched, but that once they get going, the quality of conversations between principals and teachers about instruction has been much higher because of having a common language around what good instruction would look like, and because of the frequency of those observation conversations. So that's what I'm really hopeful about, that this ultimately will drive improvements in instruction.
Is, in a way, the biggest change that principals can now do, and tell me if I have this right, any number of announced or unannounced observations of teachers in their classrooms rather than, oh, the principal is going to come a week from Thursday, I'm going to prepare the special lesson?
Yes, there is an unlimited number of observations. There's a requirement that some number be unannounced. And there's also this new rubric, a common rubric called the Danielson rubric, which is a research-based tool for looking at instructional practice and assessing that practice. And so for the first time, every school in the city will have this common language around instruction, around what good questioning looks like, around what good lesson planning looks like. And that, I think, can be very powerful.
New York State Education Commissioner John King, our guest on WNYC. We'll take your Ramapo calls, East Ramapo calls, in just a minute. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let me give our listeners not familiar with East Ramapo some background. In the Spring Valley area of Rockland County and some surrounding towns, a once great public school system is being taken apart. The middle class to affluent families who used to live there have mostly left. Now there are about 9,000 mostly black and Latino immigrant public school students and more than 20,000 private school students, mostly Hasidic Jews. The Hasidic families, though not public school users, have the solid majority on the school board, and they are eliminating many of the AP classes and almost all the after-school programs, sports teams, music, theater. Kindergarten has been cut to half a day. In fairness, the school system has a big deficit that the board has to deal with. The immigrant and Hasidic families are largely poor, so there isn't the tax base that there was in the past. So it's a dilemma, and it's a clash of communities' interests, and it's a tragedy for the children. So, Commissioner, what else would you say by way of introduction to the essence of the issue there?
I think you captured it very well. The thing that I would add is that over the last decade or so, as there's been less support in the broader community for the public schools, there's been a challenge in raising the level of funding that other communities in the county have been able to. And so now you have the tax cap, which limits how much can be raised. But more
than
that,
that's a statewide thing.
That's a statewide policy. And that comes on top of years in which, while other districts were raising tax rates at a much higher rate, East Ramapo was not. So now you have a moment where you have a limited prospect of new resources and a history of underfunding, and that's colliding with the community tensions that you described.
So how can state law allow a community to fall behind that much? Is there something that ultimately falls in your lap, or does it fall in the legislature's lap to even out some of the inequities that are really going to, in some cases, ravage the future of these kids?
Well, there's really two problems. One is a problem that is about bad decision making. And I think there is certainly a lot of controversy around that, some legal challenges, some that we will have to review at the department. Where the question really is, has the board chosen to put resources in the wrong direction? A separate question is, are there enough resources to run the kind of quality program we would all want? And that's a more complicated issue for the state, because really what the state does is sets a floor, a minimum level of education that needs to be provided. And above that floor, communities are making choices based on local tax revenue. And in this case, the board is making a different set of choices than boards 15, 20 years ago. And many of the things that are being cut are not mandated. They're not required activities. You're not required to have, for example, advanced placement courses. So when they're cut, that's very frustrating for the community. Obviously, it's a loss for students, but it's actually not a violation of the statewide minimum. And so what we're struggling with is how do you hold the line on that statewide minimum, and then what's the role of the state when a district pulls back on things that are above the minimum but really valuable for students?
Let's take a phone call. Here is it Jenna or Gina? Forgive me. In Rockland, you're on WNYC.
Hi, it's Jenna.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm actually a principal on one of the non-public schools in Rockland County. You know, we just had a meeting, all the non-public school administrators just had a meeting with the superintendent of schools last week to go over this issue and see how we can help. We have this crazy balance of, you know, our parents who are taxpayers and send their kids to the non-public schools, and they want certain things out of the district. And, you know, the district that we're working with, we get busing from the district, we get textbooks from the district, we get special ed services from the district. So it's how we're stuck. We're indebted to the district for all that they provide, right. But our parents are, you know, they're also, you know, they are voting with their money.
They're voting on the property taxes, the school taxes, and
yes.
And they're voting for school board members who will vote their interests on the board. So, Jenna, the concern that the commissioner was implying a minute ago that maybe too much money is being taken by the school board to be used for those things that the private schools are eligible for out of the state funds that you just listed, transportation and textbooks and special ed, because that's the majority in the community now, and leaving too little in the public schools for the entire rest of the public school population's education. It sounds like you have some sympathy for that concern.
I do. I really do. But then again, then our, you know, then the non-public school parents will feel that they're really not getting anything. But I guess it doesn't matter at this point because they're still not, you know, they're still voting against the school budget.
Mm. Do you have a question, any question for the commissioner directly?
We, you know, I just want to help this cause. I want to see things work out. And it's, I have friends who are teachers in public schools, and also they realize the tension between, you know, the Orthodox community and the public school community. And unfortunately, it could be causing a lot of anti-Semitism here.
Jenna, thank you for your call. Commissioner, anything you want to say?
Well, two opportunities upcoming, and I appreciate the dilemma that the caller feels. I think she feels the same dilemma as the entire community feels. Two upcoming opportunities. One, there'll be a second budget vote, which will determine what resources are available locally.
Because the first round of the school budget was voted down, of the few districts in the state to do so recently.
That's exactly right. So that's an opportunity for the community, I hope, to come together and to think carefully about what resources the schools need. And then there is an effort in the legislature to accelerate payments to the district from the lottery, which would help the district to manage some of the accumulated deficit that they have. And so how those two things play out over the next couple of weeks will really frame the scope of the challenge going into the summer and the next school year.
Nana in East Ramapo, you're on WNYC with Commissioner
Great.
John
Thanks
King.
Thanks so much.
Hi.
Well, you know, the budget is one issue, and the voting on it is the same. But then there's the issue of, as you said, bad decision-making. And I'm really wondering how the state and how you are addressing, number one, there's been covert harassment of non-religious school members. And basically the dismissal of their ideas and dissent when they are dissenting from religious school members'
ideas. On the school board.
On the school board. So that there's one issue there. Number two, the former school superintendent was deposed, but he is, what, from what I understand, was still on salary. And then a new school board member who was more agreeable to the religious school board members was hired. And number one, then there were two salaries being paid. So that's really bad decision-making when we're talking about budgets. Why in the world would we be upwards of almost $1 million mm-hmm. in salaries when only one was needed? So how is the commissioner and the board dealing with that? And number three, another issue in regards to a bad choice is that when they were underutilized schools and the religious community, or sorry, say the religious school board members were wanting to sell those schools, they were wanting to sell them to religious schools for way under value. So there was, again, misappropriation, from my understanding, of what we, what, well, not misappropriation, but a misguided attempt to sell buildings that really would have drawn an enormous amount of revenue, but the religious
so from
school board
the,
members...
From the public interest to the private interest,
from the
you're
public
really
interest
alleging.
To the private interest, and, in fact, when we talk about misuse of funding, that, from my perspective, would be misuse of a decision to sell to way
right.
undervalue. So how is the commissioner and the board dealing with all of these bad choices, as he said?
Commissioner, do you want to give a very specific answer to Nana on any of those?
Sure. So let me try and divide them into three categories. There are some allegations of specific potential misappropriation of funds allegations. Those we're reviewing, and we have a sort of quasi-judicial role in considering those, and so I can't speak to the specifics of those. With respect to the building, one of the challenges in these building issues is figuring out what is a fair market price for a school building in a community that does not have necessarily a booming commercial real estate market. So figuring out the fair price is a challenge. We've reviewed some of the decisions so far, have invalidated some, approved others, and we'll continue to review those. But the third category I wanted to speak to specifically, where we've taken some action with respect to the board, is placing students in special ed placements in non-public schools when those students could be served in district programs. And we've specifically identified that as a problematic area for the district. We've required them to take some corrective action. They've challenged our action in court, but we are continuing to press forward with an effort to ensure that they try to serve students first in the district context with general education students before placing students in non-public environments.
Let me ask you about democracy. This is our fifth segment on the East Ramapo schools in the last 2 months, and I didn't know anything about the situation before that. And I've come to think, what a tragedy for these students. Yes, the Orthodox community has its rights and its legitimate interests, to be sure, but the nature of democracy as it currently exists gives the public school families almost no say in the fate of their children's schools. And the schools are being effectively dismantled in many meaningful respects. Is this tragedy unique in your experience as education commissioner?
No, I think this comes up in a variety of contexts. Now, one of the challenges is we sometimes reduce in our discourse democracy to majority wins. And I think actually democracy means a broader set of concepts about human dignity. And there's the question, if even if the majority has one view, can that view then be allowed to trump the fundamental rights
but
of the minority?
But isn't that what's happening here? And if so, how is it democracy to have a 9-member public school board that is dominated by members of a private school community who, as a matter of community belief, do not use the public schools, though they have an interest in getting as much public funding as possible for those specific services that the first caller was talking about? Why can't there be a certain minimum number of seats for public school parents or staff so that both communities' interests are fairly represented? How is this democracy?
Well, I think it's democratic in the sense that those school board members are elected by a majority of the community. Where I would draw the line to protect the sort of individual rights notion that to me is inherent in democracy is that that majority on the board cannot deprive students of their constitutional guarantee to a sound basic education. And the challenge again here is—
But that must be a low bar. if they can eliminate so many AP classes, if they can eliminate most sports teams and clubs and, you know, music and theater and have students with, if the reporting that I've seen is accurate, who only have a small number of periods during their day and a lot of lunch and study hall periods, it must be a low bar for a sound basic education under the state constitution.
It is a minimum threshold. And I think, again, that's the real challenge here. And we see this not just in East Ramapo, but across the state, where some of our low-wealth districts that are losing population are cutting back the very same things, APs, art, music. And the Board of Regents and the department have called for greater attention to equity in school finance because we've got to do a better job of protecting that minimum. And I actually think we've got to think more broadly about what that minimum looks like. I think art and music and advanced placement courses ought to be a part of how we think about the minimum.
And half-day kindergarten, we're debating in the state, as you know, universal pre-K. And now they're reducing kindergarten to a half day in that district. That is not in those children's interest.
Right. One of the things that the Board of Regents has talked about is we ought to have a minimum threshold of full day K and full day pre-K for our high need students. And that will require more resources from the state. And that's ultimately a decision that rests with the governor and the legislature. But the sad thing for our society is if we don't provide those things, we end up paying the cost later in the social services and lost opportunities for those students.
Another democracy question is many of the public school students are from immigrant families, which means many parents do not even have the right to vote in school board elections or, I guess, in the property tax elections since they are not yet citizens, even if they are here legally. Some other places, including New York City, as I'm sure you know, allow any public school parent to vote in school board elections as inherent stakeholders. So how is that democracy in East Ramapo?
The question is the school providing the services that students need? And to the extent that they fail to provide the students that, for example, the services that, for example, English language learners might need, then we have the basis to act. But again, our challenge is our legal authority to act is constrained to ensuring that minimum threshold is met.
Do we need to look at the radical solution, especially since you say this is going on in other districts that are losing population, losing property tax value, even where there isn't like a community versus community conflict? Look at overhauling the very idea that local public schools are funded by local property taxes. That really locks in inequities. So maybe there should be, and maybe it's politically impossible, but maybe there really needs to be a statewide tax system like we have in New York City where we don't fund on property taxes. So it's not like the schools in, you know, East Harlem are differently funded than the schools in the Upper West Side, even though those districts are very and there are debates about that, too, of course. But it comes out of the city central budget. Maybe education needs to come more out of the state central budget so that there aren't these savage inequities.
I certainly think we ought to have a better balance between what portion of funding comes from the state level and the federal level as opposed to local property taxes. I was on the Equity of Excellence Commission that Congress set up. Secretary Duncan asked me to serve on that commission, and one of the recommendations of that commission was that we need as a country to look at how we finance schools and think differently about the role of local property taxes. We are unique in the world in our heavy reliance on local property taxes when you compare us to our, for example, our international competitor countries. So I think we do need to rethink that. The Governor's Education Reform Commission has committed to take up the issue of school finance in a report that will be issued this fall, and I think this issue will certainly be addressed in some way.
All right. We're just about out of time, and I want to throw in one other thing very briefly on our radar screen. Standardized test scores will be coming out this summer based on these new Common Core curriculum tests, which were more difficult, and given when the new curriculum was not yet fully being taught. So what would you say in advance to parents who will freak out when they see these numbers, especially if they matter to middle school or high school gifted school admissions.
Mm-hmm. So two things that are really important. One is that the New York City DOE is committed to adjust admissions rules and other rules that affect students for the change in the test score. So it won't have a negative impact on students. That's one. Two, these scores don't mean that schools are doing worse. What they mean is that we've got to set a higher bar and have higher expectations if we want students to be ready for college and careers. And these new assessments and the new Common Core standards are part of that effort.
John King, New York State Education Commissioner, thank you so much for talking about these issues with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, comedian Marc Maron. Stay tuned.